right. Hello, everyone. The panel's excited to be back at the table. So let's pull up a chair. Let's pop a top. Let's pour some sweet tea in the glass if that's what you enjoy doing, or refresh that cup of coffee. And let's make some podcast magic here as we get the Meeting of the Unknowing Minds up and running. If you're out for a walk or if you're out running or something, hopefully we can take up a good hour of your day and get you through that run up that hill, or just fill your mind with other thoughts other than what's going on in the world. Have some fun. So as always, my name is Matt Eshy, the head cross country associate head track and field coach at UAB. I'm your host for the Meeting of the Minds, but we have a phenomenal panel that always accompanies me. And today we've got a tremendous guest. We're going to introduce him here in a second. I think many of you have always heard his voice. Some of you have been lucky enough to see who he actually is, but we'll get to him in a second. But first and foremost, as always, down in the Rio Grande Valley, we've got Mr. Darren Flowers. Darren, how we doing, buddy?
Doing well. Glad to be here. Excited for a conversation today.
That's going to be a good one. We've got down, holding it down in the SLU in St. Louis, up in the U, Mr. John Bell. How we doing, sir?
Doing well, Matt. It's excited to be here for episode number 7.
Episode 7, amazing. Anybody think we'd get this far? This is awesome. In the land of the Hoosiers, up in Bloomington, Indiana, Mr. Mike Erb. How we doing, sir?
Doing well. Good to be here.
We've got, I'm glad he actually got out of the kayak, just decided to get away from Lake Tahoe, come back on land, finally out there, out in Nevada. Mr. Scott Williamson, how you doing, Scott?
Doing well. Sorry I missed you guys last week, but the lake was calling. I needed to spend a little time up there and recharge the battery.
I think you can understand that. It's a beautiful area up there. And a gentleman who's surviving the hurricane back and forth. He's got his power back on. I think the food's back in the fridge. I'm not sure what's going on. He's been in and out already, so hopefully the connection's good today. But the one and only director of track and field and cross country up at Monmouth University, Mike Nelson.
Good to be here.
You jump out and back and forth on us. We know you got some issues, but glad everything survived.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I was doing. My wife is taking my son to Dick's Sporting Goods. He's playing flag football, and he needs a cup. Explaining what
that's important. That is important.
So, he needs a mouth guard and a cup. So I had to explain what that was.
Isn't that your job to go take him to get a cup?
Well, I'm here with you gentlemen, so, you know.
Okay. And I think I can go down a list of things. And we will, of course, we have a gentleman on here who sometimes needs no introduction because he's introducing everybody else. We've got Mr. Mike Jay on the call today. He was a 2014 Track and Field Writers of America, Scott Davis Award winner for excellence. He's the lead announcer for the Drake Relays, the Iowa High School Championships. He's the voice of almost every single Division I championship, whether it be for majority of, actually for all the indoor and outdoor track and field championships. He's done the cross country national championships in D3. He is the lead announcer. Actually, he is the home meet announcer for the University of Washington, Iowa State, Northern Iowa, Nebraska, the University of Iowa, the great Hawkeyes up there. And we won't hold it against him because he does Iowa State, but as well, we won't hold it against him because he does Alabama's home meets too, which we're not going to, we'll quietly go right there. But I mean, he was, a 30-year high school coach himself. And at the same time, 13 years at Columbus Junction as the athletic director. So he's been in this profession for a very long time. It's a gentleman I've known for 20 years. I remember he made fun of me actually after my first meet at Iowa. So I'm actually very, very pleased to have Mike Jay with us today. Thanks, Mike.
Well, that's my pleasure to be here, you know, and Scott Williamson and I share Iowa roots. I'm a little taken aback that you went to Lake Tahoe and bragged about that when you could have went home and went to Lake Rathman, you know, so
I've been having all this time off and, I would love to get back to Iowa if this, COVID thing would, calm down a little bit. You know, most of my family
Absolutely.
There is, probably they probably don't want someone visiting from wherever, but I'd love to get back there and make it out to the lake.
Well, it's obviously a very beautiful place for sure. But it's my pleasure to be here. Like all of you guys, the reason we're in this track and field has been so good to me. I was blessed to have great high school coaches. I tell people I had to bust my butt to be mediocre, and in some days I wasn't even mediocre. But I fell in love with the sport at a a junior high kid, and it's just, it's been a great ride so far. It's been great for me and my family, and allowed us to do a lot of things that I would never be able to do. You know, I tell people when I go to, you know, I would never get on Stanford's campus for any other reason except for a track meet. I do the Ivy League championships, and I just go to every meet every year with my fingers crossed, hoping they're not going to ask about a GPA or want to see, you know, any kind of paperwork, you know, a transcript or anything. So it's wonderful. I get to see a lot of parts of the country and see some great, great, great student athletes and from all levels. And so it's a blast, and I'm just blessed and lucky to be a part of it.
Man, and honestly, it is great to hear, great to see again. I'm looking forward to diving into some of those conversations and some of those stories that you have that we've all seen. I think we've all heard you at track meets, and it's something special. But to start the show off, let's take a look into what happened this week in track and field. And first off, we just got to start with Carissa Schweitzer and her group at the Bowerman Track Club, because Carissa was on our show last week. If you didn't get a chance to listen to it, Go for Gold was episode number 6. Carissa was on there along with her coach, or her college coach, Mark Burns. And they had that evening, we were, you know, blessed enough to have Carissa on that morning. And that evening she and her teammates went out and broke the American and world record in the 4x1500 meter. They're in 1629, I believe it was. Elsie Cranny, Colleen Quigley, Shelby Houlihan, and Carissa Schweitzer. From what I've known, Cranny went 410, Quigley 407, Houlihan 405, and Schweitzer 404, which is something special. I know she's got a 800 coming up tomorrow, I believe. So,
can we just call that the unknowing mind effect?
Yes, I think that'd be a great effect right there.
Maybe that'll get us some more high profile guests.
Hey, you want to run fast? Get on the Unknowing Mind podcast. You know, boom, there you go.
You know, on that 4x1500, Ash, you know, I've had some ongoing conversations and debates with people on Twitter that for some reason think that it is that the state of Iowa is behind because our girls run the 1500 and 3000 instead of the mile and 2 mile, or 1632.
Yep.
And two Iowans were on that 4x1500 record, you know, with Shelby and Carissa. So when I put that out on Twitter asking for comments, nobody seems to have anything to say. So but you know, it just boils down to you know, obviously having great talent and great genetics, but it also is, as you guys know, as longtime coaches, you know, if the kid is, if the student athlete is driven and wants to be better, that's the most important thing, opposed to you as a coach providing workouts and wanting them to be better. It has to come from the heart. I think it's, you know, selfish for us from Iowa, we're pretty blessed to have those two, and they live together and train together. So, and having been, now being able to call two of our own world record holders is pretty darn special.
There's no doubt about it. I think when we all talked to Chris last week, we could quickly and easily see that drive that it was like, there's, man, I wouldn't step in front of her. She'll run you over and then she'll just keep going. Like, and it was incredible. But that group has that. Shelby had that that exact same mentality.
Yeah. Carissa won one state title in high school. She won 3,000 as a freshman and never won another state championship. Wow. Well, and we had Lisa Cole at Fort Dodge, Iowa. Lisa Cole, yep, never won a state title in anything, cross or track. And then still has the American collegiate record in the 10,000, but had the overall 10K for a while. But yeah, so, you know, I guess the point I'm just trying to make is if the kid wants it and not really, you know, doesn't want to throw in the towel, you know, it's endless on what they can accomplish.
And especially with, you know, with everything going on right now, it's amazing to see what these ladies are doing, you know, because that's, again, another one of the time trials. I didn't see a rabbit or anything along those lines. It was just them going against each other in the group. And that's an incredible group. And I mean, in the group itself, the men on the other side, we can't forget it. They set the American record in the 4x1500. Evan Yeager went 340, Grant Fisher 336, John McGordy went 338, and Lopez Lamong went 339 for the American record. So, again, a pretty celebratory weekend for the Bowerman Track Club. Flipping shoes here, because even though we have, you know, I'm a distance coach, as we know, and we got, we got three other distance coaches on here. We got a couple jumps coaches on here, so we got a little bit of everything. We also had Valerie Ellman, I'm butchering the last name. I apologize, Valerie. But set the American record in the discus going 70-15, which is, I think, 230, 230 feet, 2 inches. Huge throw for her, if I'm not mistaken, almost a 3-meter PR.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like, you know, and I think across the country, the world, you know, so everybody just kind of coming out of like these training segments and just putting up some amazing performances. I mean, that was huge.
I think it's like Carissa said last week. Yeah, I think, you know, Carissa alluded to it a little bit last week, you know, that you don't have this pressure to perform, you know, consistently week in and week out. And it's almost like, okay, we can really pick our moment and go for it. And, you know, I think Herb asked a question about it last week. And you know, how do we look in and learn from what we're doing right now and carry that into the next year and beyond, you know?
I think they're able to schedule that competition about where they're at with fitness and training opposed to the other way around, you know, so they are really at their very, very best when they go to have that competition. And watching Valerie Allman in that discus ring was amazing, you know. Wow, what a talent.
So athletic.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Those performances are just phenomenal, and we all love to see them. I'll play the devil's advocate a little bit, and this is kind of where my question was going with her last week. I didn't want to antagonize anybody, you know, but I think as cool as those world records are, it's frustrating sometimes to see them when that's all that they are, right? I mean, and I don't mean that that's all that they are, but like, it would be great to see something like that where that puts you on the podium or that wins you a medal.
Agreed.
And, but that requires a fixed time for that to occur. And we seem particularly, and maybe this is true around the rest of the world, we seem particularly good in the United States with being able to be ready to go when we feel like we're ready to go. And maybe what we need to do is sort of figure out, how can we do that under the lights? How can we do that when it counts? You know, and somebody can get the stats for me here, but if I'm not mistaken, there's every year there are these phenomenal performances that happen, I don't know, the week after the trials or 2 weeks later, where people are getting qualifying marks that they didn't have before. And it's like, hey, that's awesome. That's really cool and everything. But like, it'd be a lot cooler if you did that at the trials or got yourself on a team or whatever. And it's not always our time to be ready. We got to figure out ways to be ready, you know, or figure out how to drive that training to be ready at the right time. So I love it. You know what I mean? I think those performances are phenomenal, but I think that may be indicative of a little, I don't know if it's a problem, but you know, I think we could do a little better with making them happen at times that matter, places that aren't ideal and not perfectly set up races or whatever. So my two cents.
Don't you think that like things like travel and being in a different time zone, mm-hmm. and you know, having competitions week in and week out, and that fatigue and the emotional highs and lows, right? So I think there's more of that. And then, you know, you come into a situation where you can get up for a performance, mm-hmm. one or two big performances, and then you have time to kind of decompress, reset, and approach to the next one in this scenario that we're in right now.
And that's exactly why we see what we're seeing with these world records and whatnot, you know, and maybe I guess my point is it might be, I don't know if it's a learned or a trained or maybe a season setup thing, where let's try to create those opportunities where you're getting up for it at the right time. And you know, at a time that might not be my schedule. I don't have the flexibility to schedule it when I want to do it. We know that this date is this date. So let's try to catch that wave and those ups and downs to happen, you know, at a time like that. But you're 100% right. I love seeing these big performances. They're fantastic.
Yeah, and one of the big – I know there's a couple – Scott, did you have something? I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, it really kind of shows, you know, how important, you know, sports psychology and the, mm-hmm. you know, the anxiety that athletes kind of deal with and things like that. You know, we probably don't spend enough time on some of those issues.
No, we really don't. And there's a lot of groups, and I know a lot of people are trying to address that as best as they can, but it's amazing what they're doing. I mean, the other one that we're forgetting to forget, I'm going to probably butcher your name, Katie Najat. Am I correct on that? I believe. I got one right. Thank you. But Katie had an outstanding vault, 492 vault, which is what, 16 feet, 1 3/4, if I'm not mistaken. And anybody who saw it on Twitter, it was out there, or Instagram, wherever I saw it, the vault for actually the American record, I don't think she missed that by more than a half an inch. Just looking at it, I slowed it down and watched it. It was a gorgeous vault and just missed it. So she might be coming after that. Actually, she might. She will be coming after that American record. I mean, that performance was number three all time in the U.S. It's number six in the world. So it's one hell of a vault. But it's amazing. It begs the question sometimes. You guys just, you know, Herb, you just alluded to it a little bit. It's like we get all that extra pomp and circumstance going on at the track meets, the pressure to get on the podium, to do that kind of stuff. But these people are just jumped in the backyard. There's less pressure. And always, my always thought was, if you put the jersey on somebody, you never thought of it this way. If you always throw the jersey on, we say some people, you know, are phenomenal training wise, but you put the jersey on them and they just blow up. The things don't go right because it's the scare of the jersey. What if it's not the jersey? What if it is actually truly just the environment? Because actually this year I took my kids and I started wearing the jerseys during practice, actually in the fall. We have three different uniforms. We're lucky enough to have a green, a gold, and a gray here at UAB. And I put the gray uniforms on the girls during practice to try and get away from one less factor. But what if that biggest factor is just everything else and it's not the jersey itself? No, that's just a random thought on that.
And it's something we have to address. I mean, it clearly, Chris has said it last week, you know, the lack of pressure and being able to just go kind of run workouts and feel it a little bit more than you would have felt it with a coach standing there with somebody with a, you know, holding the stopwatch made a big difference. And, you know, so we got the answer, right? Like, you just got to find ways to take that pressure off and to make it a little more comfortable, I guess. And like Scott said, I mean, we probably don't spend nearly as much time on that kind of training. Clearly, when the pressure's gone, we still see phenomenal results. So, you know, let's try to find ways to you know, combat that in a regular competitive situation.
Well, you know, I've always thought that it's not just the training factors. There's a lot of other things, like let's say meal prep, you know, waking up in a familiar place. You know, a lot of these, it seems like a lot of these performances are pretty like close to home, you know, and they can be in a pretty similar environment that they're normally in training. And, you know, when our athletes go over to Europe, it's just a completely different ball game, you know, unless they're in a situation where they can get some normalcy. And I think as coaches, I know what I try to do a lot when we go on trips is I try to keep things as normal as possible, you know. Keep things as consistent as possible with timing and meals and things like that, where it's not that extra factor, like Eshie said, that, you know, that can play on that, on the mind.
That was amazing. I talked to either when I was done running at Iowa, I had the joy that to bump into Mike McGuire from the University of Michigan. We were up there for the Big Ten meet, and he and Ron Warhurst ended up coming over to talk because it's Big Ten. So we were chatting away. I said, how did, you know, and I asked Coach Warhurst, I said, how did Willis and Brennan run so fast? You know, Michigan guys that were unbelievable talents. And he said they hated traveling. They hated going to – not that they hated to travel, the part of that, but they hated having to go to a big meet, having to go to the Stanford, having to go to NC State. They're like, look, set a meet up in our backyard and we can just go do it ourselves. But if you think about where those guys came from, that's what they did. It was small meets. It was performances there, teammates and friends helping each other out, and the big performances – happened every single time. So when they ran 146s and 147s, they didn't do it out at Stanford. They didn't do it down at some big Texas relays or the Drake relays. They did it at the small Michigan Invitational, you know, when there was no snow or ice on the ground. So they did it then, and that was the best part. So maybe small, quick meets, best place to easily have great performances. I mean, I know our girls come back from we go up to Boston. We come back 2 weeks later. Boston indoors, we come back 2 weeks later at the Crossplex, and for some reason, we pop PRs left and right, not just the distances, but the sprints do, the jumps do, the throws do. And it's like, man, but it's back to being familiar with stuff.
You know, this really starts to kind of bleed into the conversation we've had, been having for the last 3 weeks, really starting with Coach Fetzer 2 weeks ago. And this is why I was so excited to have Mike Jay join us, because I think we're at this inflection point in the sport in this country where we see these top-notch performances at these little, small, one-off pole vault competitions, 5Ks, 4x15s, whatever, these really small events. And Chris did allude to this, that those are highly valuable. But then you have, on the other end of the spectrum, you know, and this is again where I think Mike J can bring a lot to this conversation, something as big as the Drake Relays, because that's a very important event. And there's events like that throughout this country that are anchors to the sport of track and field in our country. And it, you know, I think there's a place for both type of events. You know, where I think the sport is in a little bit of trouble is those in between events that are, you know, that go on for too long, that have every event, that drag everything, like they just kind of drag everything down. And you really don't see huge performances out of those, but you see them in the small events and you see them in the big events. But I think to Mike Erb's point is, okay, the Olympic Games, that's a set date. And we want to see huge performances. I would like to believe as coaches and as fans of the sport, we want to see those huge performances in the biggest moments at the Olympic Games, at the Olympic trials, those type of things. But then there's also a very marketable, exciting thing to do with these small events. So how do we do both events? And really, I just think the middle ground there is the problem, a big problem with track and field.
Yeah, I mean, don't you think we're our own worst enemy sometimes, you know? So many of us have gone to, 7 and 8 hour track meets because we've had to. You know, even though we're huge track fans, it wears on you. I can imagine as an athlete, especially somebody coming on a team and they've got to be there at the track at 9 a.m. because there's an event going on their teammate is in and they don't perform until late afternoon. I'm really excited to see what these small meets have done so far at Prairie View, the ones at in Oregon. I'm really excited for the Blue Oval Classic. At Drake on the 29th, I think it can open up a whole new track and field. I don't know what I'm trying to, you know, besides meet, but an opportunity for everybody. You know, the meet's going to be done in 2 or 3 hours. People can come to the meet, see world-class competition or top-notch high school competition, whichever meet you decide to host or go to, you know, whether it's a high school meet, a collegiate meet, or professional meet, 2 or 3 hours. And still have time to go out and catch dinner as a family before you go home. It's, you know, things like that. It's just, I think our sport needs that. Maybe not every single meet needs to be like that, but I'm with you, Coach. We need to offer that somehow.
And I think, you know, again, just because I've been to the Drake Relays so many times, and I'm a Midwestern guy, so obviously my heart's in Drake as opposed to Penn or Texas or somewhere else. But, you know, I think what separates Drake from something like the Penn Relays or something like Mount SAC or Texas, and you have to be there to experience it, but it's on time. You know, unless there's inclement weather, I've rarely seen the Drake Relays get far off of schedule. But it's an event. It's a community event that brings the casual fan out, right? You know, they do the vault in the West Des Moines Mall. I know they did it with a high jump a few years ago in the High V, you know, and so they're getting the events out to where people can experience them. They obviously have that mile race down in downtown Des Moines, you know, and obviously they've added the half marathon and the road races for the public. So there's ways to actually get involved in the event. But I think it's different, where the Drake Relays, I think, is different than like Penn or Texas or Kansas or even, you know, Mount SAC, is it does have, you know, Des Moines it has a small community feel to it. I don't know if that's just an Iowa thing, but it's a festival, right? It feels like a festival that the entire community embraces. Whereas I don't think that exists at the Mount SAC Relays. You know, it's hard to have a festival feeling in Los Angeles County. It's just, it's too big. And there's too many other things. You know, the Texas Relays, although a very nice competition for the college kids and the high school kids, there's other things going on for the casual fan in Austin, Texas to go out and do. And so I would just appreciate the history and the stories you could tell, Mike, about the Drake Relays and kind of the value of that competition in the Midwest.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head when you called it a festival. You know, I mean, that's what it is. There's so much going on. And then, you know, you walk outside the stadium, and I haven't been in, you know, a lot of years, but, you know, there's, you know, everybody goes and get their turkey legs. They get their funnel cakes. I mean, there's, you know, for the little fan that can't, you know, sit there and watch track and field forever, they can go out there and do other things. And I mean, it's just a great, like you said, a festival.
to I know I've mentioned this on this podcast before, but I go back to the idea of, like, you know, if you're a basketball coach or a soccer coach, do you leave for every single one of your games? No, half of your games are played at home. Yet in our sport, track, cross country, many programs, every single weekend, they've got to get on a bus or a plane to travel elsewhere to go. All of our dreams, all we ever talk about is meets that last 2 to 3 hours. But yet it's never a reality unless most schools, if not all schools, could be able to host meets. And so thus, what are we left with? We're left with a very small number of hosts that can host meets. And since everyone has to go there, and this problem is exacerbated on the East Coast, I can tell you that's what I've noticed, you know. Imagine if your basketball coach walked in, they're never going to play a home game. That would not fly.
No.
Imagine if your lacrosse team would never have a home game. But in our sport, that has become acceptable. And it's been acceptable for decades. Mm-hmm. And until that problem is addressed, which I don't really think it can be in a lot of places, we're never going to get away from having 17 heats of the 200, 5 heats of the mile, and every single school on the East Coast going to BU because that's the fast track, right? And so I'm at the track at 8 in the morning, and I'm still there at 10 p.m. at night, you know, which happened this year and will happen in the future. So that's a problem, you know. We're great at addressing the what we'd like to see, but we're not necessarily great at saying, well, the actual problem is pretty simple. And schools don't have facilities, and there's no pro facilities at all. You know, we're stuck with this. And so, you know, we're trying, and there's a lot of smart people in this sport. But you're still, you know, you can't host a meet unless you have a facility.
Yeah. And one thing, and back to it, cause I know you've got stories of the Drake Relays and things along those lines, but it was kind of funny. The way you were mentioning, and I think this ties in well, you mentioned the fact, can you have a 1 to 3, can you have a meet from 2 to 4? You know, leave for lunch, come back for dinner, and be good to go. And I think a gentleman you and I both have a lot of respect for, and a lot of us on this podcast have a lot of respect for, Coach Vazorek, would always say that. Can you have a quick 2 to 3 hour meet so you can come back and be home for dinner? You know, because a basketball game is 2.5 hours. You're going to be home for dinner. Baseball, it's pushing it, but you're still going to be able to do that. Maybe you grab a brat and some hot dogs or something like that at the game. But track meets are 7 to 7 affairs, and we are our own worst enemy. But I know for a fact, and one story I've never heard you tell before, Coach Vazorek would always tell me about how he got Mike Jay to announce his meets. And I always heard the Coach Vazorek version, which as we know, as he got older, got a little bit different. And we love Coach Vazorek. He's a Hall of Famer without a question in the Iowa Hall of Fame. He's in a number of them. I still do believe the Silver Hawk that's out in front of the baseball stadium was pretty much, it is him. It's the Silver Hawk. But I remember you were at meets. I know the story from Coach Vazorek's way of doing things. How did you get into announcing? I mean, how did you get into Iowa meets? Because I know it wasn't just Iowa meets, but I was told that that's where you got your start. So if you would, enlighten us how it got going.
Well, that was where I got started collegiately. Did high school meets. I was a longtime high school track and cross assistant track coach, head cross country coach for 30 years, and announced our home meets. And, I started going to the Drake Relays in 1975 as a sophomore in high school and heard Jim Duncan and that was, oh, wow. That was it. And I've yet to miss the relay since 75. And, I just think that, an announcer, brings so much to it. They can also bring too much, you know, so that's a fine line of educating the crowd and hopefully, helping athletes to perform maybe just a little bit better than what they thought they could. But anyway, long story short, I went to an Iowa meet, in Iowa City. It was about just a 40-minute drive from where I lived they had no announcer at all. Some lady was like doing first call for each event, you know, on second call, and that was it. And So I just, after the meet, I told Wiz, introduced myself and said, hey, this was like 83 or 4. You know, if you've ever need somebody, I'd be more than willing to, without stepping on somebody's toes, I'd like to help you out. Well, the next year they hosted the Big Ten Championships and they called and I did the Big Ten meet and then was just lucky enough that other schools were there and invited me to come to their place. And so it's been a great ride. I've been lucky enough that in, 35 years of announcing, I've never asked anybody for a job. It's been, a great ride. I don't know how else to put it. You know, I'm a track fan first and foremost, and then get to go somewhere and get the best seat in the house, now with all the technology, I've got that all at my fingertips if I'm smart enough to use it, to get everything I need. And so it's track and field's been great to me and my family. My kids are love the sport. My wife loves the sport and go to meets with me as often as they can. And so it's like you guys. Obviously, none of us are in this sport for the money.
nope.
But it's working with student athletes, watching kids get better. Being able and hoping that you're going to see this outstanding performance. And that type of thing. I've had the opportunity to, announce a few world records in my day. And it's like, wow, whoever would have thought that coming from being born in Centerville, Iowa, of all places, and then, making it to the big time like Scott Williamson, but it's crazy when I think about that and try to wrap my head around it, it's a big deal and one that I'm just absolutely blessed and fortunate to be a part of.
Go ahead, Mike.
Please. I was going to say, you kind of alluded to it there, Mike. I'm just curious, kind of some nuts and bolts of your process. So you said now you've got this information at your fingertips. Obviously, you could be up there Googling names and numbers and everything else. What did that preparation look like before you had it all just right there in front of you? What was that like?
Well, I still coach. I put it in my – meaning I don't – what's available from the timing crew is crazy. We're now we can follow field events electronically and that type of thing. But all my prep, I'll probably spend on the Drake relays preparation upwards of 60 hours because I do every event. And so as soon as I can start getting names, I've got to get started. Mm-hmm. And so I go to Des Moines 3 days early and hole up in a hotel room and with a refrigerator full of beer and ham sandwiches and get to work. I love the preparation and to do it right and to honor those student athletes and what they've done. That's where part of the education of the crowd comes in. Mm-hmm. Is to let them know that this person has done this or that. And to decipher which statistics are important, which aren't. Some people you don't have to give very much on, and they know who that. People know who that is. And that type of thing. So, when Lisa Cole set the American collegiate record in the 10,000 at Stanford, I was lucky enough to be on the call, and so that was for me here as an Iowan calling a race for a fellow Iowan who was about to. Set a new collegiate record in the 10,000. And I couldn't wait to tell the crowd that she had never won a state championship. And people just were booing and all. They just couldn't believe it. That somebody could be that good and never win a state title, even in Iowa. But it just goes to show you the kind of athletes that we're able to deal with on a daily basis. So back to the preparation question. It's a lot, but it's easier. Back in the day when guys like Jim Duncan were announcing, they probably subscribed to half a dozen newspapers and mm-hmm. magazines, and get information late, that type of thing. Where right now, if all you had was Twitter, you could get track meet results well before they ever hit a printed page. So it's a lot of work, but it's very rewarding. And some people keep a database, and update that every meet and this type of thing. I just start from scratch every meet. I don't trust myself of having everything entered where it was supposed to be entered. And so I just start all over every single meet and don't keep any notes from one meet to the other, because it keeps it fresh in my mind. And if I don't write it down myself, I'm probably not going to remember it.
It's incredible that you actually would essentially restart from scratch every single meet. Cause yeah. I've seen the book that you've carried around. You and I had a couple times where we ran into each other at Washington, and I saw the book that you had out there, and I was like, you're like, I can't even talk to you right now. And it was, I don't even want to know how many pages was in there, but it was unbelievably incredible. And I've been blessed. And when we brought our Bradley team up to some of the meets at Iowa, you still knew things about it. And the kids came up to me and were like, how did he know I was that? How did he know? But it's because he's the best in the country for a reason. Everything is there, everything it goes, and it changes everything. And one thing I wanted to ask is, we had talked about the Drake Relays earlier, and amazingly enough, the one race I got to compete in as an individual, not as part of a relay, I think you had to go that night to announce, was the Hall of Fame dinner that night, that Thursday?
Yeah.
And so, oddly enough, my cousin ends up announcing it. I didn't realize it was my cousin until later in the year. But John Wise, of course, John Y, ends up announcing my 5K race that day because you were gone. But how did you get into the Drake Relays? Because, again, we talked about it earlier. You started out, I believe, in 02 or 04 or something like that as an assistant, and then now you've been the voice of the relay since, what, 05, 06? So how did you get into that? I mean, again, we just –
Tom Crochelle was the – Duncan was the announcer. Mm-hmm. And then when Jim died – in the 80s, and Jim was a professor at Drake and an amazing talent. And then Tom Crochelle, who was a Drake student, not at the time, but in his past, and then he was the SID at Iowa State. So when Duncan died, they brought Crochelle in, and because he had a Drake background, et cetera. Well, there was a time when a lot of things were in turmoil at Iowa State. You know, they had athletes getting in trouble and doing all kinds of stupid stuff. And so Tom really, really got busy with that. You know, he was getting phone calls during the meet, this type of thing. And long story short, he hung it up. He and I worked together for 3 years, and then he hung it up, and I took over. I was just lucky enough to see Mark Kostick was at a meet at UNI. It wasn't a Valley meet, but it was just a meet that Drake was there. And Mark was the Drake Relays director and the throws coach at Drake. And I was calling the meet. And after the meet, we were sitting around having a beer. And he said, how come you don't announce the Drake Relays? I said, well, nobody has ever asked me. I said, I've been going since 75, sitting out in all kinds of weather. I'd love to sit in the booth someday. And he said, well, you've been asked. So the next year I went in and started working with Crochelle, because they kind of knew maybe he was going to be hanging it up at some point. So then that same year I started doing then Tom gave up the state track meet. So I started doing the state track meet. So I've been doing the state track meet 2 years longer than Drake. But just, you know, right place, right time, man. It's I believe that is so much of where we get to be and how we get to be places, you know, as a obviously, you got to have some talent to do what you do, but also meeting the right people and networking and be at the right place at the right time. And I've just been very fortunate to have that opportunity.
I think you do actually. You alluded to a little bit, have the best seat in the house, not only because you get to watch everything and you get to pick where it's going to be. But outdoors, you don't have to worry about the elements as much most of the time. You at least are going to be into a little booth, or you got something going on, especially the championships and the Drake Relays, as we know, both Drake and Penn. But most of us are partial to Drake here, we've got some Thursday nights or some Friday nights that are legitimate a shitstorm. I mean, with as much stuff rolling through as is, so you've had the perfect place, your perfect spot in the house. You mentioned Lisa Cole and her American collegiate record in the 10K. Out of everything, I guess this might be an open-ended question, but out of everything, favorite performance that you've been able to call? Do you have one? I mean,
absolutely. You know, and my favorite meet, and people say, how can you, is the Iowa State meet. And obviously I'm very, very biased, but we packed 15,000 people into the Drake Stadium 3 days in a row. It's both boys and girls, all four classes. And it's Saturday is 8 hours of nothing but finals. But anyway, my favorite event was 10 years ago at Peyton Jordan when, Galen Rupp come in with his entourage and he's going to set the American record at 10,000 and got this white as snow Midwesterner from Wisconsin, Chris Zielinski hanging back. And I, in my mind, I kept wanting to, you know, the crowd was all about Rupp, you know, and Alberto was there, you know, giving splits and yada, yada, yada. And the crowd was all about Galen setting the, I kept thinking this Zielinski's coming, man. You better hang on because this cat's good. And with a mile to go, he threw it down and the race was over. And Rupp had no answer whatsoever, and he became the fastest non-African at 10K and ran 26:59, and it was magical. It was an amazing night. Sometimes I wish I hadn't been on the microphone so I could have yelled a little louder just to really absorb what happened. But it was, when it was over with, the crowd was stunned. They were stunned that Galen didn't win it and set the American record. And here's a guy that they, you know, didn't know. Some of them weren't really that aware of what Chris had accomplished and what he just pulled off. And some people still talk about it today. I think Alberto still talks about it. He's got a sour taste in his mouth about it, but so be it. But it was fun. That would have to be right up there with the very best things I've ever been a part of.
It's easily one of my favorite things I've ever seen. And fortunate enough, Chris, of course, is the coach now, the cross-country coach at the University of Florida. And it's fun to watch him, and I've never asked him about it, but I agree with him. I've watched that thing a few times. I still get chills. I can watch that last mile 100 times and I'll still get chills. I mean, being a fellow Wisconsinite, you know, I know we got the Iowa connection, the Iowans on here, but fellow Wisconsinite, that is an unbelievably special performance without a question.
So Mike, I got a question for you along those same lines. Because, you know, as coaches, we always try to, you know, get these kids out of their heads, get these student athletes out of their heads, and like say, it's not about the time, it's not about the mark, it's about their performance, it's about, you know, pulling something out from deep within you and rise to the level of competition to do your best and try to win, right? And so I want to get your thoughts on that, you know, both as a coach, someone who's been in track and field for a long time, someone who's seen a wide variety of performances. What are your thoughts on that? Like, you know, as far as that, because I'm sure you remember a lot of times and statistics, but at the same time, the performances seem to be, like, for me, that's what I remember.
Yep, absolutely.
I can't always remember the time. So I just want to get your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, and I think that 10K by Zielinski plays right into that, Darren, is that, you know, his performance of beating Galen Rupp was huge. I mean, and then people realized how fast it was. You know what I mean? I mean, he had both in one night, a huge on paper upset, regardless of what the time was, plus the fact that he set a record, you know. And I like to, when I would talk to my kids about performance over time, you know, was the number six runner on a cross country team. You know, those are the kids that can, I don't care what place or what you run for a time, you just be the best sixth runner out there on the cross country course, and we've got a shot to win this thing, regardless of what their time is. So, and I think that's one of the beauties of cross country is, you know, you be the best number two or three, four, five, whatever on the course, and it doesn't matter. So you see that a lot, you know, I think, you know, from kids that go out and perform in that way. It's a little bit more difficult in the sprints because it's got to be all out every single step. But even up, you know, through the 800 and the miles, getting to be more of that as well. But on the distance races, you know, that performance can be more dramatic than whatever that end result was in time. You know, and I think we see that. I'm not a fan of the tactical races where we jog and kick. I don't mean that at all, but when somebody's out there, you know, and you know, let's take Shelby Houlihan, for example. She may run 4:05 for 1500 and people say, well, my gosh, she can run well under four, but that 4:05 might be her best race of the year, just the way she ran it. And I think we lose sight of that. And that's part of the problem, I think, with our sport. I really, really do, is that people that, we don't do a good enough job educating people about the performance. Where all we do, me, myself included, get wrapped up in what the end result was. Be, was it a record and that type of thing? And opposed to man, they ran such a great tactical race. The last 300 of that mile was perfect, yada, yada. And regardless of whether they ran four flat or 352. And I think we need to appreciate those things more, you know, whenever we get the opportunity. You know, and it's more difficult in the field events to be able to look at it that way because, you know, you don't slow down to in an event to save energy or that type of thing in the field events. Much harder to do that like you could in a running event. But still, we've seen it where in a field event, the guy coming in you thought was going to be the overall favorite. And I use the term, I hate to use the term, but chokes maybe a little bit. And the kid that had a PR in the shot of 65.5 all of a sudden throws 67 and wins it. That's huge. And it's big for our sport. I think we need to do a better job of acknowledging that opposed to just who ran fast, who set a new record, who set a new PR and that type of thing. So I know, I'm not sure I answered your question, Darren, but you know, what Selinski did at Stanford that night was to me was magical in two different ways. What he accomplished, regardless of the result of the time rather, and then his time as well. Cause it was Galen Rupp's event, period. And then for Selinski to steal that from him, although he wouldn't say he stole it, but it was pretty amazing. And I think it was just as impressive if he had ran 28 flat, just because I mean, Galen had it in his back pocket and Chris decided, well, this is about long enough, I'm gonna go get him, and did. And to watch that unfold was amazing.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's great stuff. And basically, you know, what I'm alluding to is that I believe that competition is ultimately what creates the result, right? And we're in such a tough situation with social media and the glorification of, like I said, records and times and results and things like that. It makes it hard. It's a mixed message for a lot of student athletes because they just want that result. You know, they just want to put that thing. Yep. On social media so they can get those clicks and likes and all that stuff. And I know we've talked about it on here before, but, you know, just looking at track and field, especially at the collegiate level, and even maybe this addresses Mike Nelson's question as well. Like, do we look at team win-loss records, right, throughout the regular season? Or we can condense meets. We have home and away, and there's an actual winner and loser. And then every performance matters, right? Every regardless of the time, every performance matters. And I think as a result, you're going to get those great performances. Sure. At least that's just my thought.
One last thing on Shelby Houlihan is in Iowa, we run a lot of relays at our meets. And Shelby was the kind of kid and that we always, and we never would have seen this if all we had was the 4x1 and 4x4. You always wanted Sioux City East when she was on the anchor to get the stick 50 or 60 meters back. And you didn't care how fast she ran, but you knew she was going to run fast enough to win. And for the people in the stands that weren't dyed-in-the-wool track fans could enjoy that and really appreciate it, whether she ran, you know, 55 for the quarter on the anchor of the 4x4 or 60 flat. They didn't care. That they just knew she got the baton way behind and they won. And so those kind of kids and those kind of results are, you know, and people still talk about some of that stuff, you know, about somebody, you know, getting the baton and the leader was already on the backstretch and they caught him, you know, and they have no idea what they ran for a time. They just remember that performance. And I think those of us that love this sport, we need to do a better job of when we go to a meet. And somebody asked how the meet was, instead of saying, hey, Joe Smith ran, you know, 10 flat, you know, and no, hey, you know, he had a bad start and came back and won it, you know, or somebody, you know, somebody, Coach Herb has, instead of going 7.6 in the high jump, he went, you know, he made 7.3 for a lifetime best on his final attempt and won it. You know, it's stuff like that. We need to do a better job of telling people what is so damn good about what we do, opposed to just running fast, jumping far and jumping high and throwing far is what it takes. You know, these kids have balls, man. I mean, it's just to here's one last great story. This is one of my greatest stories of track and field. Iowa State, and it's tied into the Drake Relays, of course, because that's where I'm from. But Iowa State, when Bill Bergen was there, had amazing, and they still do now. Martin does a good job too. But Bergen had, they were so deep in the distance events, so deep. And it's the 4x1 mile relay. And they had just won the DMR not that long before that. And they come to the 4x1 mile relay. We always ran it at noon when everybody was back from Peggy's and the West End Lounge and had a couple beers in their belly and they were ready for some great track and field action. Brett Kearney was an All-American at Iowa State. He's an Iowa kid from Ames. And he ran the 12, led off the DMR that Iowa State won. And not that long after that, it seems probably longer than it was, but Bill Bergen went up to him and said, hey, so-and-so, John Nuttall or somebody was sick and can't run the 4x1 mile relay. You're going to be on the 4x1 mile relay. And Kearney had never run a mile in competition. And long story short, Jim Duncan caught wind of it, announced it to the crowd that the Ames, former Ames prep is going to run the mile for the first time on the 4x1 mile relay. He ran 3:57.98 on the third leg, and Iowa State won it. Had never won ran one before. The crowd was friggin' livid, and it was. But everybody recognized sub 4 minute mile. But it was the fact here was a guy that had never done this before, and just pulled a performance out that was amazing. And those are the kinds of things that we need to be aware of going on at the meets that we're at and let people know how cool it was, you know, how amazing it was. And it can even be with somebody having an amazing performance, you know, when Michael Jordan, you know, remember all the talk was how sick he was before that final and he scores however many, you know, 3,000 points or whatever the heck it was, you know, with 105 degree temperature. And when he gets, that temperature gets higher every year. But, you know, those type of things, you know, the fact that the Bulls won and Jordan scored that many points wasn't so huge is the fact that he did it when he was, you know, in today's standards was on his deathbed. Those are the things that we need to sell the fan, you know, the borderline fan about our sport that, you know, if we're going to have a 7-hour meet, and that's going to be the norm every weekend, let's really do a great job of highlighting those great efforts and performances, opposed to we only had 3 kids that set, you know, new school records or that type of thing. Count how many lifetime bests are out there, and it'll knock your socks off.
I remember I was actually at the a couple of years ago, being a Wisconsin guy, I was up at the Wisconsin State Track and Field Championships. And I was sitting in the stands early in the morning, 9 o'clock, sun's finally beating down, in UW La Crosse Stadium. And I want to say it was Nina, if I remember this correctly, Nina ran a 4x8, Nina High School, and it was the number 3 time of the country. And I knew it. I was sitting next to another coach and another couple coaches in there. We all knew it was the number 3 time of the country, and nobody knew. Nobody was told. The announcer didn't do anything. All you heard was, you know, the announcer talk about what a yellow flag actually meant and all this kind of stuff. Mike, you and I and John, we've complained about this for years, but nobody was none the wiser. If I'm not mistaken, one of the high jumps that day was one of the nation's best high jumps. And again, nobody knew. Nobody even knew it broke the state record at the time. And the gentleman has been doing the announcing up there. I don't even know who it is. And I ended up writing a letter over to the WIAA saying, guys, an email saying, you're missing some of the most amazing stuff. And they wrote back saying, what was on our live broadcast? I was like, but there's 20,000 people in a 2-day event at UW La Crosse, and nobody knew what was going on other than what does the yellow flag mean? And we don't do a great job. I agree 100%. We don't do a great job educating our fans of what is going on. And especially at our own home track meets, it's tough to find an announcer, especially, of course, Mike, at your level, but just an announcer in general to help out to do those things. But I think was something we've talked about at length on this podcast, and something I think we all go, what would be your view to change the sport? Do we go to smaller meets? Do we do was Orc has always said, make it a 3-hour thing? Do we do a morning session? One thing we've talked on this was you do a morning session of kind of your B level kids, and then you do an A section of, let's say, 2 heats of the 400, 2 heats of the mile. You got your elite high jump, elite javelin, like, so it's an elite afternoon thing. But it's a quick 2-hour window. You are in, out, done, home, drinking a beer and eating dinner in time for the nightly news.
Well, and that's, and I agree, Ash, but that's kind of like what Mike Nelson was saying. You know, it's difficult. Yep. And if you're going to have that two-hour yep. elite window, and many meets have done that. Kansas Relays did that for a while when Tim Weaver was there. But is that it's the same coaches, it's the same officials for that whole 10 hours. They, you know, they're not getting a break, you know. Yep. And so – it gets, you know, and it gets old. They are, you know, it doesn't pay off like you would like it to, when we still have to have that 7 or 8 hour meet around the 3 hour window, you know. Maybe it's two different days, and that becomes very cost prohibitive. You know, do you have a meet that's just varsity only? You know, and some coaches will say, well, that's why we have the conference meet, and that's why we, you know, and that type of thing. But it's tough. It's going to take somebody out there willing to take that chance. And I'm hoping that maybe that's one of the positives that will come out of this this pandemic, and that, hey, you know what, they put on a 3 hour meet with non-traditional events. You know, didn't somebody run the 150 and 300 hurdles a week or so, you know, things like that. Where you have to look at the performance because you have nothing else to compare those times to, you know. And I think that's great to say how fast somebody ran a 150, and you can't, you know, it's or the 300 hurdles. It's a new event to everybody. Right. But I think I'm hoping that that's something that even, you know, I wouldn't think every meet would be that, but if everybody could do one, you know, whether they host it or go somewhere and it's a 3 hour meet and it's a to and from 1 day bus ride type thing, I think it would help re-energize everybody. But it's tough to break old habits. It really, really is. But our sport needs something that's different, whatever it is. You know, I like the co-ed relay thing. I'm not sure I'm ready for that to be an Olympic event, but I like the co-ed relay thing as well, you know, where and they can put them in whatever order they want, you know, within those four, those type of things, I think are pretty awesome as well. So I don't know. I think we've got to think outside of the box, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Doing the same old thing isn't always the best old thing. So we've got to think outside of the box. And even if it's just having a meet and you've got one or two special events, you know, start somewhere. Train the crowd as to what's important, you know, and know what everybody's lifetime bests are going in, you know. And I like to, you know, if you've got 5 or 6, 7, 8 heats of the 200, and boy, all of a sudden that 200 is like a 600, you know, when you get down to the last one. But I like to keep track of how many lifetime bests were, you know, and say, hey, you know, we just ran 8 heats of the 200, but we had 47 new lifetime bests, you know, that type of thing. This for the people that are in the stands thinking that was a long 1 hour of running all those. Oh, hey, yeah. This was worth it. We had 47 kids that ran the fastest they've ever ran for 200 meters. You know, that's kind of a big deal. So there's things we can do, but mm-hmm. We're not going to change the world in one day. That's for sure.
So then you had something.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, Mike, then getting kind of back to what I said, you know, a little bit ago, what do you see the future of something like the Drake Relays then? Because it is something that's been going on for 100 plus years.
Yep,
but
absolutely.
Again, it is, as I guess maybe I wasn't clear on my point, but I think there's a value to that type of meet though too. Like I said, I think it's the extremes that there are value. Because you definitely can't do the Drake Relays every weekend. Like that's just it's too much. It's way too much. But there is a value to that meet that is inherent. Because, I mean, it's a big meet. It's well attended. And there's value there to it. So it's that combination of the small meet, the one-off event, the 100-yard dash or the 150 or the 300 hurdles versus the big festival, right? And I think there is a place. But kind of where do you see the Drake Relays going in its next century?
You know, I think what's going to drive Drake and Penn and Mount Sacramento is the NCAA and any rules that are put in, you know, about
qualifying
different divisions running against each other in the same race, same event. You know, there's been talk about that's not going to fly, you know, and meet restrictions. Obviously, what has changed the Drake Relays over the years has been money, you know, and facilities. You know, there's more great facilities around the country right now where teams can save money and not have to travel very far and still go to a good meet. And, you know, where so, for so many years, you either went to Drake or Penn or stayed home on that last full weekend of April. And that isn't the case anymore. But, and that's all well and good. I mean, that means to me that there are more opportunities for student athletes to perform. But I just think that the carnival atmosphere is got to change, and I'm not sure what that change is for us to stay and still be relevant. Just because some of the things that we talked about, you know, can people afford and do they want to be at a 3-day track meet? You know, is it going to be where you know, we have professional events, college events, and high school events, that instead of having them all mixed together, is it going to be one day for each, you know, and that type of thing, so people can decide which day they want to take off work and come to a meet, you know, and that some of us, you know, love it when you run a high school event and the next, you know, the next people in the blocks are, you know, some of the best in the world. And kids get to rub shoulders with those people. It's pretty impressive, pretty awesome. But that could be one of the changes that has to happen as well. But as much as I love those type of carnivals, I think I'm becoming the minority. And I think, you know, we've got to think outside of the box that we're something that draws everybody to love our sport like we love it, you know. We'll see, you know, and if we don't, you know, we're not going to be in control of any of the changes that come our way.
I think, I mean, thinking outside the box is something that a few years ago, the association, the USTFC Association did, but the NCAA did, where we did, you know, change the format of the NCAA Outdoor Championships to men or women, men, women, men, or men, and women, depending on the year. And the numbers are out there, so this is 100% true. We actually, from a track and field viewer standpoint, when we shrunk the meet into about a 2-hour window or so, maybe 2.5 hours tops, but a 2-hour window on ESPN, we outdrew, if I'm not mistaken, the World Series, the College World Series, which I love watching the World Series. I love the ping of the bat. There's something special about that. But at the same time, we outdrew that. When an event like that, with those teams, with that many individuals represented, if we can do that in a short 2-hour window, think to be able to do that in a regular season meet and something that we can all be able to do, because clearly there's a viewership there, but clearly we're not packaging this correctly at all. You know, we've got to do something where the average fan can come in and take a look, and you say, oh, was that Hayward Field? No, this is the viewership on ESPN, which changes everything. The attendance was great, but this is the viewership. So we've got to be able to do things like, and you're right, Drake Relays have done a hell of a job. You've got the vault inside the Des Moines Mall. I can't remember what the mall's in out there. But
it's a
that.
Capital Square now downtown, but don't you think, guys, aren't we all a little guilty of this regardless of what? Boy, it's tough to change, you know. It's scary.
Oh yeah,
you know, boy, this is the way we've always done it, and we've gotten by, and it's been great. Now we're going to change it. What if it isn't good, and then nobody comes back the next year? It's crazy, you know. And I remember all the years that I coached it. Sometimes I would say, now, am I doing the same exact workouts this year that the kids did last year? You know, why not change it up a little? And you're afraid to. You think, wow, it worked really good, you know. And that, so it's tough. Change is tough, man. And that could be part of it. You know, it's going to take somebody some leadership that isn't afraid to think outside of the box and realizes that, hey, this is what we got to do to survive, you know. You know, and let's see what it's another thing that scares me is that, and I don't know how much of this plays into that we always do the same thing, but if there would happen to be no college football this year, you know, some of us that are involved in track and field are going to be looking for something else to do. But so that's why I think we've got to do more to make our sport more relative to people saying, hey, you know what? They don't make us a lot of money, but boy, we get a lot of fans and a lot of people love this, what they're doing, and that type of thing. Instead of having the guy speaking up and saying, well, you know what? I've been going to their track meets for 20 years and every one of them's the same, you know? So, we've got to, or somebody's going to tell us it's too late. You know, you didn't change fast enough.
Yeah,
I agree with you, Mike. One thing I've said, from the get-go with all of this is that, maybe this quarantine and the coronavirus will force us to change and come up with some new stuff, whatever that might be. We don't even know.
But I think we're seeing some of that, Mike, with these smaller meets.
Yeah.
And like Coach Herb said, you know, if we could just get that channel to when it's the most important, well, maybe that's the next step. You know what I mean? Build off of this and talk to the wheels, the powers that be, and say, hey, you know what? Everybody should be in the bed. Let's have a big meet 3 weeks from now. You know, how many times have you guys gone to a practice and the weather's been absolutely perfect? You said, man, I wish we had a meet today instead of practice, you know? So, I mean, set that table up a little bit where, you know, maybe they go to one less meet before that or whatever, but I think we can do some of that. But so Mike Nelson, I interrupted you. Otherwise I'm getting old enough. I would have forgot what I was going to say. So I had to interrupt you.
No, I think that, you know, this year, especially if there is a cross country or, and maybe a track season, I think people are going to be much less likely to get on a plane and fly, or send this group to this state, this group to this meet, and this group to that meet. It might just be more of, hey, you know, we're getting on a bus all together. We're going to the local meet. It's going to be us, them. We're going to battle it out, and, you know, we'll have some fun and see what happens. And then maybe all of a sudden people go, well, maybe this is the way we should have been doing it all along, you know.
What's wrong with having a dual meet in a triangular?
I just organized a dual meet with our rival. Now, it's indoors, and I hope it happens, but we'll see.
Yeah, but I mean, exactly.
Yeah. You know, so I maybe this, you know, as a consequence, but a positive consequence, is that we stay a little closer to home, and maybe we're competing against our local rivals in that smaller meet setting, and then all of a sudden, wait a minute, your performance means something more than just the PR or whatever. You know, you need to beat her, you need to beat him, and that pushes the athletes and provides some excitement that actually is relevant to your. I don't think there is a casual fan in track and field, but you're like, you know, mm-hmm. not quite a super fan either. So,
you know, I think, and the two meets that, my foundation put on in Iowa there, this summer, the one we had was, and both of them had limited events, but we put a limit of only the first 50 people that wanted to be in the bleachers could sit in the bleachers. Everybody else, no bleachers. But we opened up, if you brought a lawn chair, you could sit on the football field. And the people, we had 200 people on the football field spread out in lawn chairs and absolutely loved it. One old guy said, I've been coming to track meets forever, watching my grandkids. I've never watched a track meet from that vantage point. That was amazing. You know, do things like that. I kept waiting for somebody to light up a charcoal grill out there on the football field, you know, but they didn't. But things like that, that, you know, hey, that's, you know, if you've got an opportunity to send him somewhere else to warm up, you know, depending on what the events are, but things like that, people absolutely ate that up. You know, just, we've got to think outside of the box and make it fun for the fan, as well as a great atmosphere and an atmosphere that where we can, the kids can perform at a high level. But we've got to, without, you know, any athletic director is going to tell you whether you're a non-revenue sport or not. If you don't have any fans, your chances are you're not going to be around much longer.
Great point, without a question. Great point right there. Mike, one thing you've always done, you've given back a ton to the sport. You've done, not only the voice to make meets entertaining, you've got phenomenal perspective, some great stories, but you've done an unbelievable amount for the sport, and I love it. I'm actually repping the shirt.
Hey, there you go, buddy.
Yep, have to rep the shirt. Yep. Yep. But one thing you've done, you mentioned it, your foundation a little bit, and I want you to talk about that because I think it's great, because I know you put on clinics before. You've given out $500 scholarships to people. You've, whether it be in the Cedar Rapids area, the Columbus Junction area, whatever the case, you've bought shoes for kids with underprivileged. And I know a lot of the proceeds, the shirt I'm wearing is a stopwatch. It says Track Guy USA Foundation, $25 for the foundation, which is great. $25 for the shirt, which, if I'm not mistaken, all proceeds go to the foundation. But
yeah. So sometimes you get a chance. I'm not here. Thanks for the opportunity. I'm not here to peddle that, but I appreciate it. But sometimes go to trackguyfoundation.com and just see what we do. my kids wanted me to get started. I have three grown sons in their 30s, and they, you know, they wanted us to, wanted me to get something started, some kind of a nonprofit to give back to the sport. And I didn't want to do that because they wanted to call it Track Guy USA. And I said, well, you know what? There's a lot of track guys out there, you know, but, and my one son says, well, but you'll be the first one that'll market it. So we're going to do it. So I pushed it off for about 2 or 3 years. And October of 2018, we hit the ground running by selling t-shirts online off our website that we have a graphic designer. The deal was our graphic designer would be somebody who ran track either at the high school or collegiate level or both in the state of Iowa. And our printer would be somebody that has something to do with track and field in Iowa. So the person that does our printing is a track coach in Southwest Iowa. And the girl who does our graphic designing was a state champion at Davenport Assumption and All-American at Grandview in Des Moines. And anyway, long story short, so we started selling t-shirts. And it went over like crazy. Mm-hmm. And so our first initial goal was to give away 12 pairs of shoes to impoverished kids in Iowa that want to be involved in track or cross country but cannot afford to buy their own shoes. So and sell 200 shirts. The first 12 months, we sold a little over 1,000 shirts and gave away 56 pairs of shoes.
Wow.
Now, since March, let's go ahead here, turn the calendar ahead to March. There was no track season was over. So since March, we have now given away 27 pair of shoes for cross country kids. We gave away $7,500 scholarships, and there were no shoes to, not as many shoes to give away. So we bought 62 $50 gift certificates to grocery stores in people's hometowns that needed help. They lost their job because of COVID, whatever the case may be. So we gave away 62 $50 gift certificates. And got a friend who works for Nike, and I called him, and I saw him at a wedding, matter of fact, and said, hey, here's what we're doing. Does Nike ever have any shoes they don't need that perhaps, you know, we could get a deal on? And he goes, yeah, I think we do. So a couple of days later, I get an email, and he said, hey, I put 6 boxes in the mail for you. You'll be getting 6 boxes of shoes. I'm thinking 6 pair of shoes, right? 178 pair of brand new spikes. I said, why the odd number? He said, that's all the boxes I had, and that's all would fit. So then we didn't have a track season, but I've given away like 60 pair of spikes so far to kids. But we give, I mean, everything. We give, it's whatever. I had a guy, it was a, every day is crazy. And all is, we do it all on, you know, donations. Mm-hmm. And I had a guy email me the other day, what's today, Friday? He emailed me Wednesday and said, I don't even know who the guy is. Mike, he's in from Iowa, Cedar Rapids. He said, I love what you do with Track Guy. We follow it along. My daughter ran at the BGM meet. Just want to know how many kids out there need that you still need to buy shoes for? What's it cost for a scholarship? So I said, well, you know, a lot of kids need shoes. Got a lot of kids that we need to take care of, and they cost us. We got 5 shoe stores that we work with and give us a discount. We got shoes cost us about $90 a pair, $75 to $90, and a scholarship's $500. I got a check from him in, or an online donation from him yesterday for $750. I've never met the guy.
Wow.
Never met him. Same thing. A guy from Illinois here sends me an online donation for $500. Had no clue who he is. So I had to email. I said, thank you for the donation. Don't know who you are. Yada, yada, yada. He said, well, we have a lake house at Lake Okoboji in Northwest Iowa right next to the Houlihans. And Shelby told me I should be supporting your foundation. So, yeah. So it was the very first, when we first, this is my last story. I told you the last story now about 8 times. But when we first started selling shirts, my boy said, Dad, it'd be awesome if we could get a shirt to some people that are really famous in track and field to model them for us, and we could put it on our website. Well, Jenny Simpson comes to the Drake Relays every year, and I've had the opportunity to meet her a few times. So I texted Jenny, and I said, hey, here's the deal. Here's what, oh, yeah, send me a shirt. I'd love to wear it. Before She would have gotten the shirt in the mail. We received a $500 check from Jenny and her husband saying, take care of the kids in Iowa. So it's been absolutely amazing. People love to help kids, and everybody's got a soft spot in their heart to do that. We had a young man from, here's another last story, from Madrid, Iowa, that last year, after the cross, not 19, but 18, after the cross country season, his team won the state title. And it was shortly after the season. This kid was, that I'm going to talk about, there were three brothers. One was on the varsity team that won the state title. Another one was their top JV runner. Then another one was older and had graduated from a very poor family. And as a matter of fact, the varsity kid and the JV kid shared shoes because they were in two different races. The older brother was taking him to school. He pulled out of a Casey's parking lot, which is our quick stop store. Yeah, every small town's got a Casey's. Anyway, a semi ran a stop sign, hit the car, killed the brother that ran in the state cross country meet. The JV kid just got out of the hospital not too long ago, and we're talking fall of 18 with serious head injuries. And the older brother came out of it pretty much unscathed. So I put out on that we were going to, you know, when this kid comes back, we told his story, and he's going to have shoes for life from Track Guy. So far, we've gotten over $3,000 of donations that have been pinpointed for this kid as long, you know, through college. It's just been absolutely mind-blowing how people love to help kids and help them, you know, but many of them just, they have to be asked, you know, not a lot of, there are obviously a fair amount of people do it on their own, but it's crazy how many people will step up to the plate and say, yep, you tell me what you need. And you know, I've had a guy from Geneseo, Illinois, that's given us $500 twice. No clue who he is. No clue. So anyway, it's all good. Check it out sometime. There's a lot of feel good stories on there. I wish every state would do something like this and every sport would do this, because there's a lot of kids out there that don't get involved at the middle school and high school level because they just don't feel like wearing used stuff to practice or meets or games. And I totally understand. I totally get it. So we try to fill that void and get them some new shoes. And we're going to have a meet next year, inner city Des Moines. And, the plan is to have it in mid to late August, and every single kid that enters gets a brand new pair of shoes to start school with. So we'll see what we end up for kids, but I think we can pull it off. And it keeps track and field on the forefront, you know, so that's it. That's our mission. That's the foundation.
That's awesome, Mike. That's great.
I'm a little speechless at that, especially that last story there. And I know for a fact we didn't bring you on here to talk about, you know, to publicize it, but I thought it was something unbelievably important to talk about.
Oh, thank you for that. But, you know, I just just lucky to be in the situation and in the position where that we can do that and help kids, you know, and put a smile on somebody's face. So what it's all about.
Absolutely. I'm Florida. We're going to put a link. We'll put the link to the Track Guy Foundation into our bio. So we can.
Well, thanks, Ash.
Yeah, make a donation that way. And make a donation, buy a shirt, have fun with it, get your kids involved with the Track Guy Foundation, a quick little shirt. And actually, they're fun. Everything from the field, not track, into lane four, into the stopwatch shirt to make you look like a coach. You know, that's the one I've got on right now. I think those things.
Now we have Track Girl. We have a Track Girl shirt too. So those have been, have been pretty popular. So it's a lot of fun, you know, and we offer a deal to high schools that has been very, very popular, that if they can buy – if they buy 25 of whatever Track Guy shirt design they want in their school colors, they'll get them for $20 a piece, a discount, and they get a brand new pair of shoes to give to a kid at their school in need, whether they're an athlete or not. And that's been pretty awesome. Kids are eating that up.
Yeah, that's that right there is worth it. So any high schoolers listening, college coaches, you got some high school coaches that know about this stuff, send that link on to them. Go ahead and do that. Mike, I want to thank you for your time today. You know,
I love doing this. This is awesome. I like to hear stories from you guys and hear the, you know, and unfortunately sharing struggles, you know, we all, those of us that love our sport, you know, think that we struggle on occasion you know, everybody loves and knows about track and field on the Olympic year, but yep. We need to take care of it in the non-Olympic year to make ourselves our sport relevant as well.
Oh, without a question. And I mean, as always, I want to thank everybody for being a part of this, for the conversation today, the little banter back and forth. I think we've got great ideas. We all know that the sport needs to change, needs to do some tweaking, needs to do something to help ourselves stay relevant, without a question. And so if we were able to be informative for you and help you out on your walk, your run, if you're sitting back and drinking something, enjoying some coffee, whatever the case might be, and you enjoy the podcast, found some good knowledge with this and some stories, please share it. You know, as we all know, word of mouth is the best form of communication and the best form of advertisement. So we appreciate that. Go visit trackguyfoundation.com, check things out. But in general, guys, we're on iTunes, we're on Spotify, anchor.com as well. So please go ahead and follow us, give us a like, retweet us, rate us, review on iTunes. Tell us what you think. But it was great having everybody here. Great for the panel again. Thanks to Mike. Thanks to everybody else being on here. And next week we'll try and do even better. So from all of us, thank you, gentlemen. It was great having you. So look forward
to meet all you guys. Best of luck to you. And hopefully we'll see you at a cross-country course.
Thank you.
We'll meet sometime.
Thank you so much.
Beautiful. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.